This is Live Well Talk on What is Back Pain? I'm Dr. Dustin Arnold, Chief Medical Officer at Union Point Health, St. Luke's Hospital. Back pain is a common ailment affecting millions of Americans every day, limiting lifestyles as well as consuming healthcare dollars for the workup and treatment. And joining me today is Dr. Roman McGeed, a new physician with St. Luke's Rehabilitation and Pain Center. Dr. McGeed, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. You know, back pain is, it's difficult to treat. It's hard to see on physical exam. It can be debilitating for individuals. It can be chronic. But, I mean, how do you approach that patient with back pain? And let's avoid the, you know, the weekend landscaper that, you know, twist to their back, breaking leaves, and they're going to be fine, you know, by Wednesday.
Yeah.
Little NSAID, and they're going to be fine. But let's talk about, how do you approach that patient with chronic back pain?
I think the first thing that I like to do is really just figure out what they mean by their back. Oftentimes, folks who've had pain for a long time, or maybe not everyone, but there's a subset of the population that doesn't seem to have this great body awareness. It just hurts. You know, I'm sure, Dr. Arnold, you've heard people tell you before, like, I don't know, doc, it just hurts. And just piecing it apart a little bit. And the physical exam, I think, can be really helpful here. You know, well, when I move this, does that make the pain worse or better? Right, at its most minimum, right? If you're not able to tell me that, oh, yeah, it's kind of this part of my hips, or, you know, and it feels like pins and needles, or it's aching and only from 8 to 12, right? If you're not able to get that information from someone, I find a physical exam can really be helpful with pinning it down. And sometimes I feel like the back, and really it's oftentimes the lower back.
Yeah.
Right? But the lower back is everything from your lumbar spine to your SI joint to your pelvis to your pubis to your femur. Like that whole, all of that is part of back pain. And sometimes babies will argue with me. So I moved away. I learned to not really challenge that. And I'll say, you know, in medical talk, we call this your hip. And then not to avoid that direct confrontation.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
No, yeah, it doesn't.
That's where it hurts. But from a medical standpoint, because our job is to categorize things and name things, and every word is exactly this part of your body. And we need to figure out what's causing that pain, if there is a discrete cause. So that is really the first thing, I think, is just being able to piece that apart.
What are some red flags that come to your mind when you say, okay, this is something more serious than weekend warrior? You know, what might the patient have that you would say, okay, this is, we need to pursue further imaging, hence an MRI.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What are some red flags that
Anyone listening, the biggest red flags is there's a group of three. If you have sudden incontinence of bowel or bladder, like sudden numbness in the groin area, like where you're wiping, or in sudden weakness beyond whatever, you know, strength you may or may not have in your legs. If those things start appearing, that's a reason to go to the ER. That might be surgical.
Okay.
That sounds like cauda equina, which is an impingement of where your spinal cord ends at about L1, kind of in your upper lower back, and then you have peripheral nerves that run down. But impingement of that is still pretty serious, so that's a reason you might need to have that decompressed.
Okay.
So the classic red flag syndromes. Other things are, you know, beyond the weekend warrior. If it's not. And you're asking, like, when this might be something more, right?
Right.
So, kind of depending on what the chronicity of it's been. If it's been going on for a long time, that makes me think less acutely. Obviously, still needs a workup. But weakness in, like, a big toe, for example, or weakness in the muscles, numbness, tingling, those are things that are making me think, well, this might be something else. Right, it's oftentimes a neurological thing. So the things we really worry about is impingement to the spinal cord.
Right, okay, all right.
Right, I mean, those are the things, from my perspective at least, the things that, and I don't do surgery, but so the things that could be surgical are really the ones that might need an MRI. Is there a myelopathy of some kind? Is there any kind of signal change going on? That's really the thing. Because or like a severe spinal stenosis, which can lead to damage of the spinal cord if it's untreated. Because sometimes if there's not any room for the spinal cord to move, and that person has a bad fall or fall in just the right way, that can cause damage that may or may not be reversible. So those are issues. So any kind of myelopathic symptoms, that weakness, numbness or tingling that's been lasting for a long time in a leg or part of the leg, new incontinence, bowel, bladder again. Those general category of symptoms.
Yeah, that's good advice. If you experience those worrisome symptoms, you need to present possibly to an emergency room, if depending on where you're at the time. I think one of the things that comes up with back pain chronically is the use of opioids. And I know that we've talked on previous podcasts that, the pendulum probably swung too far.
Yeah.
And it's coming back just with the recent DEA and changing the requirements. So, it's moving in the right direction. But how do you approach that patient with chronic back pain from a standpoint of medications?
Yeah. For the person that's already on opioids, I think it's with that pendulum swinging, with a person that's already been on opioids, it's probably not reasonable to stop it cold turkey. Opioid withdrawal isn't going to kill you, but it's really not going to be pleasant.
No, and it's an unpleasant situation. Won't die from it, but it's unpleasant.
It's going to be horrible. Yeah. It's going to feel absolutely horrible. Weaning is probably a good idea, but depending, that's, as we talked about in another podcast, setting realistic and smaller goals. And to just wean off an opioid without providing an alternative solution is also not really fair to the patient. Just getting off an opioid is a good thing. They're not really that great as a chronic tool, as a long-term tool. And we start to depend on them. It becomes a crutch you can't get rid of. But just getting it, to get rid of a crutch, a physical crutch from someone that's only can walk with crutches, it's kind of cruel. We need to provide the tools to be able to continue moving on. So then the treatment becomes multifactorial, right? Another buzzword that we like to throw around is in medicine, and that's going to be individualized. It could be physical therapy. It could be aqua therapy, getting in the pool. Whether or not, even if it's not formalized therapy, getting in the pool, being able to walk around the pool can help, taking a lot of the pressure off of the joints, and you're building up a lot of the core musculature. And core is another funny, it's like the back. What do we mean when we say core? Because it's not just your abs. It's also the gluteus maximus, the gluteus medius minimus, like all the butt muscles, which aren't necessarily just for walking. They're stabilizing your hips, your spine. There's a lot of interspinal muscles that are stabilizing the joint from one spinal vertebra to the next. So being in the pool can help you work on those things too, even if you're not acutely aware of it. NSAIDs can still help. Again, NSAIDs aren't a great long-term tool either. They carry some risks, but at least to open up a window of opportunity, then there's other interventions beyond the medicines. Things like trigger point injections to help relax some spastic muscles. And I mean spastic, spasticity is a formal thing. There's a particular definition for that related to neurological injury, but just muscles that are, should say, in spasm, muscles that are contracting for longer than they need to be to help stabilize some joints that are hurting you. Like this can often happen with back pain. Trigger point injections can help relieve that. Topical medications, oral medications, osteopathic manipulation, all of these are great interventions. I should say things like there's SI and joint injections to the SI joint, to the hip joint, bursal injections, sometimes with steroids, sometimes with just a numbing agent, which can relieve the pain. But these things are all temporary. They're great, but they're temporary. Even an opioid is temporary. You have to keep taking it to have the effect. So all of these things ultimately give you this window of opportunity for therapy, whether it's formal or whether it's a home exercise program that you might be adjusting yourself, or a combination of the two, which is probably ideal for most people. It gives you this window of opportunity for that to be maximally effective. Because if I'm hurting so much that I can't even do therapy, I'm not going to get anything out of it. If I can't do the exercises, I can't actually strengthen those
right,
muscles.
Yeah.
And that's where these other interventions, I think, can be most effective, is giving you these windows of opportunity to better yourself.
How do you see acupuncture in the treatment of back pain? That comes up occasionally.
Yeah. Acupuncture, I think, is valid. I mean, it's in the same, I treat it the same, in the same realm of interventions, where it gives you a window of opportunity. Oftentimes, with acupuncture, from what I've seen, is it takes more than one session of acupuncture to have results.
Yeah.
Oftentimes with, but this is true also for the other things too, for osteopathic manipulation, for example. You can get some relief from one session. You're probably going to need at least a couple to get something more lasting, because you get this window of opportunity that closes. So you get some good work in with exercise, with physical therapy, with whatever you're doing, with strength, you know, strengthening or conditioning or stretching. But that window is still closing. So another treatment, including acupuncture, can open up that window a little bit more again, and you get some more work in. And after a while, that window stays open for longer and longer. So acupuncture in conjunction with all these other things, if it's helping you, go for it.
I know dry needling, if you want to just kind of explain what that is, but I know that's really become a tool that you guys are using.
Yeah. Dry needling is, in the way that I learned it, I usually combine it with trigger point injections.
Okay.
And the overarching theme of it is similar. It's a way of getting your body to focus on an area of muscle that's contracting and getting it to relax. So for example, let's say, you know, my neck is, I have a huge headache. So I go to myself or Dr. Matthew, and, you know, feel around on my muscles here. And sure, I do have a headache, but I also have this really tight area right in the shoulder here, right in the trapezius muscle. And that's where something like a trigger point or really acupuncture, there are different ways of getting similar results. So I might put a needle right into the muscle. And I wasn't aware of this being tight and painful before. I can feel my headache. The needle's in there, and it's going to, you know, it might hurt for a little bit. And then it relaxes. All of a sudden, it gets better. And once that needle's out, so the needle's it's adding a little bit of irritation to that area. And it has this paradoxical effect of you irritate it, and it balances out. And it feels better. So then we'll combine that. We can combine that with a little bit of lidocaine to get that window opportunity to last a little bit longer too. And combine that with, you know, maybe a little bit of massage, which has the effect of having a massage, of stretching a little bit. You might also get that medication to spread. Technically, it's not dry needling when you have medication
right.
in the needle, right?
But dry.
But sometimes a combination of therapies, you know, you're throwing, with things that are chronic like this, throwing the kitchen sink is not a bad strategy. I think, because it doesn't really matter so much if there even is a specific cause. It's a problem that's multifactorial, so it's reasonable to have a treatment that's multifactorial too.
Right. And like you said, there's no quick fix. I mean,
yeah.
this is multiple visits that is going to get the job done. It's kind of like hitting Control-Delete on your computer.
Yeah.
You know, the dry needle, and that's the way I think about it. It kind of resets things.
Yeah. But it's helpful. And I should mention that we do everything we can to minimize the actual sensation of pain when we do things like dry needling. Because sometimes your body's acting kind of almost separately from what your conscious mind is, right? It brings your body seems to adjust to it, but it's not like a torturous thing by any means. And we do things, we use like a cold spray can be really helpful. It numbs up the superficial pain receptors. And I've had this done to myself too. I mean, it's quite tolerable. Spend a Friday evening sticking a needle in myself just for the fun of it? Yeah, probably not. But it's not exacerbating those, you know, the pain. And if there is a pinch or something like that, it's usually temporary.
That makes sense. Are you familiar with cupping?
Yeah.
What is that?
A cup.
Let me tell you why I ask. My youngest runs Division I track, and she came home and she just had these, you know, red circles all over her leg. I'm like, what is that? Well, it's cupping. And I've heard of it, but what does it do?
So the idea behind cupping, and cupping is similar to acupuncture and some of these other things. It's really an ancient practice. My family moved here from Russia in the early 90s, and one of the traditional Russian remedies is cupping. And I've talked to people who at some point their families immigrate from other countries who have similar ways of doing it as well. So it's this ancient remedy, and what you do is it involves taking a cup or a jar and creating a vacuum in it. So, I mean, in an at-home situation, you would light a flame in that cup, get rid of whatever gases are. You're creating a vacuum, and you put it on an area that's hurting. And it's going to leave you with a bruise. If it didn't leave a bruise, it really didn't work, because what you're trying to do is using this vacuum to pull up blood towards the muscle, towards the skin. The idea is, and the reason this may work, and I'm not sure, I'm sure there's been some studies on it. I don't know. I haven't read through them. I know a lot of people swear by them anecdotally. And with anything like this, you know, exercising a degree of caution, I think, is important.
Oh, absolutely.
But what you're doing is the idea is that there's a lot of healing factors, growth factors, a lot of molecules and proteins that assist with healing in your blood. That's as an organ, right? As a tissue, that's one of the many, many things your blood is doing. So by getting more blood to an area that needs it, you might be getting some help.
That makes sense. I mean,
so that's
all right. Good. See, now I know. Well, this has been a great talk. I enjoy picking your brain and hitting you with these surprising questions about cupping. But if a listener is having back pain, how can they get an appointment with you or Dr. Matthew? Just call the clinic.
You can find our website, I believe, through St. Luke's Unity Points or through American Rehabilitation Medicine. You can make an appointment either online or by the phone.
Or they can Google best dressed man in healthcare and they'll find Dr. Matthew.
All over the internet.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need to make a podcast asking him for fashion advice.
We've solicited him for that in the past. He's been reluctant. Dr. McGee, thank you so much for joining me. This has been great information and great talk. Once again, this is Dr. Roman McGee, physician with St. Luke's Rehabilitation and Pain Center. For more information, visit unipoint.org. Thank you for listening to Live Well, Talk On. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your family, friends, neighbors, strangers about our podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, be well.